Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with us, as he is every Wednesday night. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line to talk Springfield, Cook County.
Woo!
Raise the roof.
Chicago politics.
So great.
Good to see you, Mike.
It's great to be here.
Last week we talked to you. You were in Springfield at the new bureau.
I had to phone in.
You had to phone in. How was it? I mean, to be down there during that special session, that really nothing happened.
Well, I mean, there was plenty of stuff that was happening. I mean, the Capitol felt kind of empty most of the time. But, you know, really what was going on was a bunch of posturing. There were a lot of press conferences, and there was a certain amount of legislators all going, oh, are we gonna do something? You know, there's a lot of eyeballing each other.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Early this week, Monday, Governor Rauner did do what he promised. The amendatory vetoed the SB1, where he just essentially voted or vetoed the one part that was for pension pickups for the CPS system.
Well, there were a lot of things that he had in the amendatory veto. The big part was the block grant for the city of Chicago, the pension payments for the teachers in CPS.
Really? The block grant, too.
Yeah. And then also there was a change to a system where you can get credits, school districts can get credits if they're running a TIF program for property taxes, which is, hey, Chicago, but also some other districts, other school districts around the state. And then also some changes to a thing called Hold Harmless, which is a process where if school districts are losing students, that they don't lose the amount of money that they're getting right away.
All of these things.
Which is Chicago. There's other school districts where that matters a lot, too. You know,
but
places
primarily
like East St. Louis and Cairo and Peoria. Yeah, but primarily Chicago.
So, I mean, anything that had the word Chicago anywhere close to it, he mandatory vetoed, right? I mean,
except
for the idea that whatever in the formula that was created, the new formula for funding, Chicago would get a percentage based on whatever the formula was. He was okay with that. It's everything on top of it that was added by Democratic lawmakers.
There are really two big sections here. There is the part which is the formula, which everybody agrees on. Pretty much everyone agrees on what the formula is, Democrats, Republicans. And then there's all this other stuff about payouts to Chicago and how the Hold Harmless stuff works, which affects other schools as well. You know, this is really all about Chicago. And, you know, you could say that this is politics, that Rauner is bashing Chicago for the benefit of people south of I-80. But, you know, when I went around, when Ray, our reporter, our editor in Springfield, she and I went and interviewed just a ton of Republicans and legislators and just asking them, you know, what do you think about all this? You know, where are you on it? And again and again and again, we heard from people, legislators, who really did feel and believe that Chicago was getting too much of a bite from state money.
Okay, so let's break that down, because, you know, there has been a sentiment about, and it has been political, the idea of it being advantageous for Republicans to separate Chicago from the rest of the state, and that there might just that is, and that's not new.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Daley talked about it at the Publicity Club, just the idea that's been going on for decades in the state of Illinois.
Right.
But you're saying it's more than political. There's a belief that it's true, that, that Chicago gets more favorable money, bills, anything that's happening in Springfield, there's a more favorable outcome to the city.
And, you know, maybe they do actually. You know, one of the things about politics is that there's all this talk about what people believe. And, you know, you have to take them at their word that they actually believe it. It could be that they're motivated for other reasons in order to do that. They want to get more money for their districts. You know, okay, fine. So I can't really know their mind and I can't know their motive. But the declared thing that I would hear from Republicans from downstate is, yes, Chicago is getting too much money and this just isn't fair.
Now, let me ask you, Mike, you know this, you've been covering SB1. Is it out of whack? Is Chicago getting more money? I mean, because a lot of this is about the pension pickup. And that, of course, is money that doesn't affect anywhere else in the state. It's $300 million, something like that.
Well,
I mean, is it out of whack? Is it disproportionate that Chicago gets more money than the rest of the state?
You know, what Governor Rauner has been calling it is a Chicago bailout. And rather than inject my own opinion into this, PolitiFact, the organization that researches these sort of statements and then determines whether or not they're actually true or not, has stated yesterday that they found that it is not a bailout for the city of Chicago, that it would be a proportionable amount of money for the city of Chicago, and Chicago Public Schools should receive that amount of money. Now, putting it on a whole other component here, though, which is that this Chicago Public Schools are in a raging financial disaster. I mean, if they don't get the money from SB 1, Chicago Public Schools are essentially going to have a $1 billion operational deficit for this year. If they do get the money from SB 1, they're still going to have like a $500-600 million operational deficit that they're going to have to fix. And when you go and talk to legislators outside of Chicago and you say, hey, did you know about this? Did you know that these numbers were so big? Generally, the answer was, no, I didn't know that. But, you know, they should be able to fix it by taking care of their TIFs. I mean, you know, they have all these ideas about how it's supposed to be fixed, but they don't really comprehend that the magnitude of the problem is right. So big, it's not going to be just one little quick fix.
What's lost in all of this, and I guess it does come down to what you just said, what's lost is that running a deficit of $1 billion, at a certain point, when we've seen it in the last 2 or 3 years, there has been turmoil after turmoil when it comes to teachers' pensions and their contract, to resources that are allocated to the schools, to the actual amount of staff and you know, people that are paid for at CPS. And all the while, less and less interest in the actual kids' education. And I'm not trying to be a do-gooder that's like, they need to get this done.
Right.
But it seems to me that there's a feel in Springfield that's like, let them die.
Right.
And I guess at the end of the day, no one thinks that, yes, there has definitely, and I'm not advocating whatsoever to say that there never was mismanagement. There is mismanagement out the wazoo.
Yeah.
From mayors, from CPS administrators
for a long time.
But I guess the question I have from a political standpoint is, yes, let's declare there to be a mismanaged history. Let's fix it and let's move forward. Because the idea of punishing someone politically for that mismanagement doesn't work when at the end of the day, we're talking about education.
One of the things that's interesting to me is, you know, as I was running around the Capitol, I didn't really see anybody from CPS. You know, maybe they were on the phones, but there was no presence. You know, I didn't see the kind of presence that I would expect on something like this that's so important for the city of Chicago and for Chicago Public Schools. I think that the amount of communication coming from the city to legislators around the state, really to make their case, you know, this is something that we're having a, let's call it a humanitarian crisis and we need your help, I don't think has really been done.
And is that have to do with a broken political system where the only people that matter are the leaders, the speaker and the Senate president? Why do they have to go advocate against the Senate?
That it's really not true. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting about the budget was is that the budget passed essentially because the rank and file members were like, this is garbage. We're actually going to start negotiating something. And it happened under the leader's feet. One of the first things that the new Senate Republican leader, Bill Brady, had said when he met with the caucus in Springfield, the Republican caucus, Senate Republican caucus, was, don't cut any deals, rank and file. Let me negotiate it for you, because if you start going and cutting deals, it's going to cut me out from underneath. And Jim Durkin, the Senate or the House Republican leader, did the same thing. You know, I think that there is
essentially, and I don't want to make that, it's a delicious irony that it's collective bargaining, but go ahead.
But I mean, I think that there is definitely a feeling among the rank and file that they want to get something done and they're frustrated with this process.
Now, to hear Gervin Arounder today on Roe's show, he said, you know, this was Madigan is really great at making people cave. That the Republican lawmakers, he forced them to cave. I mean, he used language in the interview that was sort of throwing those Republican lawmakers who did vote for the budget under the bus, saying Madigan did this. Madigan is a dangerous politician. He doesn't do what's good for the state, and he forced Republicans to cave.
I think that there is, I think that there is a tremendous amount of pressure on Republican legislators back home. You know, there are all these school superintendents that have been coming out in favor of SB 1. The organizations that are the education, pro-education organizations that are outside of Chicago, the most that they would say, you know, from the suburbs and downstate, the most that they would say is, let's just deal with SB 1. Don't veto it. You know, let's just do something with it.
Negotiate on it.
You know, let's negotiate over it. So I think that really where we're going to end up with SB1 and education funding is the fight is going to be about how much money is Chicago going to get and what are some of the other things that can be put into the process for other stuff. And one of the things that we keep hearing a lot about, and Ray Hodge, our reporter, is doing some great reporting on this in Springfield. One of the things that we keep hearing is that vouchers is really going to be the big story. And is there going to be some sort of thing that's going to be inserted into this language that's going to help charter schools and private schools?
I mentioned it yesterday. I don't know how. I mean, we make Jeff Sessions recuse himself of Russia. How do you not recuse the governor when you talk about CPS vouchers, and his interest in charter schools?
Right.
And he's got one named after
him. He has a big interest in charter schools.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio with us. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Talk about 2018. It's August.
Woo!
It's August 2017. It's finally here. This is the traditional month for the beginning of the 2018 gubernatorial campaign.
Of the politics. It's here. We've been talking about it for like 6 months. And
it's
finally
all
here.
That doesn't matter. It starts now.
Now.
Stay with us. There's that gritty.
It's time for the bummer music.
Yeah, and that's not bummer music. It's gritty Chicago. It's got a electric blues kind of style. Mike Fouché in the Daily Line.
Yeah.
There should be a theme song for Rick Kogan right here. Right? It's Rick Kogan. It's perfect. Mike 630 says, I don't know exactly how old you are, but Chicago, for as long as I've been alive, always gets more than their fair share of everything because the legislature seems to believe that Illinois stops at the border of Cook County. Here we go again, talking about the idea that Chicago gets more than its fair share. It's disproportionate. It's been forever.
So I'm 44, you know. I'm kind of old,
long
but not
tooth.
Really. Yeah. And one of the things that's important to recognize is that Chicago is a net tax supplier to the rest of the state, and followed by DuPage and Lake Counties. But DuPage and Lake Counties are far behind Chicago. So, you know, when you're really thinking about is Chicago taking its fair share, you could look at it from the perspective of, well, how much money does Chicago generate for the rest of the state? A lot of the programs are paid for by Chicago. And if you look at it equitably, according to PolitiFact, not me, this organization of people that research this sort of thing, what they found is that SB1 is actually equitable and not getting disproportionate.
Is this an argument, though, and you know, thanks for your text, 630, but this is an argument that's not just in the state of Illinois. It goes to any big state with big cities. I mean, there's always been an argument between what the city gets and what the rest of the state gets.
I mean, I haven't always been a reporter. I used to be a political consultant. I used to work in politics. I've worked in Massachusetts, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, California. And in all of those places, there's always a big city versus the rest of the state argument. And in every single state, everyone outside of the big cities hate the big cities, and they think the big cities dominate everything and run everything. Mm-hmm. And the people in the big cities think that the people outside of the big cities are a huge drag and a pain in the butt. I mean, that's the long and the short of it.
I mean, and you're right, 630. I've lived here long enough for those stories to come out where lawmakers down in Springfield put in a bill that says let's have a state that doesn't include Chicago.
I mean,
Chicago be its own state. I mean, we've had this argument forever.
This city-state thing actually is going on a lot all over the country. Texas recently passed a bill that limits development in the cities. The state legislature is largely red and Republican-controlled, whereas most of the cities in Texas are very, very blue. And the legislature felt like the cities were taking too much control of development and zoning, so they passed legislation to limit the abilities of cities to be able to do that. In Nashville, there was a very popular light rail line that was going to be passed, but it needed state money. And the state legislature said, no, 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 we are not interested in rail. We should really be putting our money into roads. But in a big city, you want rail because that's density. And they killed the rail in Nashville. In Florida actually has the third highest Amtrak ridership in the country, I think, after New York, Illinois, and California, maybe the fourth. And they were going to build a high-speed rail line in Florida, very, very popular in the cities in Florida, but that was killed by the state legislature because
this is not a state of Illinois issue.
No, this is everywhere, and I think that all over the country there's this real struggle between suburban, rural versus city.
All right, let's transition quickly as we wrap up tonight to the 2018 gubernatorial race. As
we
said, August is when it traditionally kicks off with a couple of days at the Illinois State Fair.
Right. Yeah.
Governor's Day, Democrats Day.
You go get your pork chop on a stick
and you listen
and
to politicians.
Go listen to politicians.
Now this year's going to be different. They're actually not doing Democrats Day. What is this?
Yeah. There's going to be
ruins my whole month.
There's going to be Governor's Day on the 16th and then Democrats Day on the 17th. It flips, you know, whoever has the party. And the Republicans are all about it. They're still going to do it. And they're also going to have the governor's barbecue, which is going to be really fun. But the other thing that the Democrats do is that they have a big production where they have a big Democratic chairman's brunch.
They do
so all
the
county
hotel,
chairs
right,
get
right,
together and,
right.
you know, and they have it at the
right, speakers
I don't know, whatever hotel
and people
is.
Come in,
and
yeah.
this year it's Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota that's going to speak. And the thing is that there's also a lot of speeches from all of the leading Democrat lights. So Madigan gives a speech and the comptroller gives a speech and the treasurer will give a speech and, you know, all those people. And the thing, and also Secretary of State will give a speech. The thing is that if you go to this stuff, you have the brunch and there are the speeches at the brunch. And then you go over to that part of the fairgrounds.
Same thing again.
It's a part of the fairgrounds. It's kind of stuck in the back. You know, nobody really cares. It's nowhere near the racetrack or any of the fun stuff. And then, you know, there's the same speeches, but it's hot. And you're sitting in these folding chairs. And then afterwards, they serve beer. And so everybody drinks the beer. And it's kind of nice if you're one of the Democrats or Republicans, because then you get to talk to all the other people in the party. You're probably getting ready to run a primary campaign, so you can go meet the campaign manager from the primary campaign. And, you know, you look them in the eyes and say, I'm going to kill
But they're
you.
Not doing it. They're not going to do the Democrats.
They're not doing it. And they're not doing it because everyone hates it. I mean, it's a huge pain in the butt. Well, I mean, the last couple of years that they've had it, you know, everyone spends all of their time and energy on the brunch, which is inside.
Yeah, and then they get there.
You know, you got food. And then you go to the thing at the state fair, and nobody really wants to go. You hear the same speeches all over again. Yeah. It's a bummer.
All right, so we've been kind of joking around on the program in this segment about how early the gubernatorial race began. A lot of people threw their hat in months ago.
Right.
As we get to the actual day, that's the Illinois
petitions,
State Fair.
Petitions go out at the end of this month. You go on the ballot.
The Illinois State Fair usually is where you'll start to see the candidates emerge at the beginning. As we start the month of August, where are we? I mean, is J.B. Pritzker the front runner in the Democrats, or polls suggest that Chris Kennedy actually has a lead? Is Bruce Rauner running? And he's on road today saying, I'll make that decision a little
running.
Bit earlier.
Yeah. He's running. He put $40 million in his account. You know, he wrote a personal check.
Yeah, I don't know what that money's for.
That's like payment on an aircraft carrier interest, you know, or something like that. I don't know. So he, you know, definitely J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy and Maya Pawar and Daniel Biss. And there's some other people that are out there. You know, it's a real question about, you know, what's going to happen. I think that we'll probably get to sometime around December and then somebody will drop out. We'll begin to see people dropping out. Exactly who. Who knows? You know, I think J.B. Pritzker has plenty of money and he wants to go all the way to the end. His numbers are good enough, I think, at this point that if they stay at this point, he'll go all the way at least to the primary. And the question is, you know, which of the other three, Kennedy, Biss, or Pawar, are going to hang on? I think Pawar keeps hoping that he's going to catch fire with some kind of Bernie Sanders-like kind of thing.
There's been a movement to that the fact that there are no women running this time around. Any chance that a female candidate jumps in the race at some point based
Maybe.
On this?
Maybe. I mean, I doubt it. I mean, I think that really a lot of the assets for having people that to run campaigns and things like that, I mean,
they've all been gobbled up.
They've all been gobbled up. You got to find somebody to be your campaign manager, to run field, to do your press in order to do your mail, do your TV, and do your polling. And that's hard to find. Yeah. So
a lot of people out in the Trump administration. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Why not just
is looking for work.
Scaramucci would be a great campaign manager. He'd be awesome.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line joins us every Wednesday. His podcast comes out here at WGN Plus Aldercast on Fridays. Mike, great to talk to you. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here.